You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey, you, welcome to this week's episode. So first off, I just have to apologize. We did not have a new episode last week because I am eyeball deep in Explore More Summit 2019 interviews and prep. It is overwhelming and magical. I cannot wait for everyone to see it. Speaking of, registration is now open. If you go to exploremoresummit.com, you can see the fucking incredible lineup. The theme this year is all around pleasure. All of the conversations I'm having with all of these incredible experts is about everything relating to pleasure, what keeps us from pleasure, how we can access more pleasure, how we can expand our understanding of pleasure. Everything has to do in some way with pleasure, our access to it, and what it all means. It's free to attend, which is incredible, and it runs for 10 days starting February 25th, entirely online. You can watch it from home, from your office, from your phone, anywhere you want. There's 3 talks per day, totally free. Of course, once you register, you also get access to the free conference workbooks, and they are going to be so amazing this year. Plus, you get access to our exclusive Facebook community. I would love to have you be a part of Explore More Summit. So it's exploremoresummit.com to sign up, and you can check out all the incredible conversations that I'm having with people. But needless to say, things are a little bit intense right now. Being able to squeeze out an episode last week just wasn't going to happen. I had to take care of myself because I've been in many hours of interviews over the past couple of weeks. So we are here this week, and holy shit, is an incredible episode. This week I'm talking with Adrienne Marie Brown, who is one of my personal heroes. She has fundamentally transformed the way that I move through life, the way that I think about where all of us are going, the way that I think about pleasure and how I interact with it and how I invite all of you to interact with it. Her influence on me has been tremendous. So getting to talk to her was a dream come true. And what was even more fun was I had the opportunity to get an advanced copy of her new book, Pleasure Activism, The Politics of Feeling Good, which is out by AK Press. And I got to read it months ago. And it's going to be a game changer for so many people, just like her other book, Emergent Strategy, was. The other awesome thing is this book comes out February 24th, 2019, which means it's in pre-order right now with the publisher. If you go to akpress.org/pleasure-activism.html, that link is in the show notes, and at sexgetsreal.com/EP247 for episode 247. They're having a sale on the pre-order right now. You can get this incredible book for $15 directly from the publisher. Of course, we want to support not only independent publishers, but specifically AK Press. They're an anarchist press that is anti-capitalism. They put out some of the most amazing books right now. So if you support them, you can get the book for $5 off as part of their pre-order frenzy. So please go buy the book. You'll especially want it after you hear this conversation with Adrienne. And supporting AK Press and independent publishers is the way to go. I also have another amazingly exciting announcement. The podcast flew past 5 million downloads a couple of weeks ago. So to help celebrate that, I'm doing a huge giveaway. There's going to be three lucky winners for this giveaway, and we are celebrating 5 million downloads in style. If you go to sexgetsreal.com/5, spelled out, F-I-V-E, for 5 million, between now and February 5th, 2019, you can enter your name and email address to help celebrate 5 million downloads. I recorded a special little video just for you that you can watch on the page, and there's three prize packages. There's things like Jizzly's Coming Out Like a Porn Star, the board game Consenticle, which I adore. It is such a fun, sexy, even kinky little game all about communication and consent, and you can't find it anywhere anymore for less than like $150 or $200. So trust me, you want this game. Plus, I've also got Kate Kenfield's Tea and Empathy cards, which are one of the most powerful tools that I use to work with clients and in my own life around developing emotional connection and finding new language for our feelings. There's some Uberlube silicone lube, which is my very favorite lube in the world, plus access to different Explore More products. So the prize packs are worth everything from $50 to a couple $100. And I would love to see you win as a way to help celebrate this massive milestone, because I could not have hit 5 million without you. Yes, you. So go to sexgetsreal.com/5, F-I-V-E, and you can put in your name and email address to enter to win. I'll be doing the drawing on February 5th, 2019. If you're in the US and Canada, I will mail it to you if you're one of the winners. And if one of the winners is from another country, then we will talk about shipping options. But help me celebrate! Put your name and email address in. It'll also mean that I can give you updates about the show, stay in touch with you just in case the show ever gets pulled. Fuck you, Fosta and Sesta. But anyway, big thanks. So go sign up for Explore More Summit. It's totally free. It's an online conference all about pleasure this year at exploremoresummit.com. Go to sexgetsreal.com/5, all spelled out, and put your name and email address in to win for the 5 million download extravaganza. And now it's time for me to tell you a little bit about Adrienne Marie Brown. So Adrienne Marie Brown is the author of the soon-to-be-released Pleasure Activism, The Politics of Feeling Good, as well as the groundbreaking Emergent Strategy, Shaping Change, Changing Worlds, and she's the co-editor of Octavia's Brood, Science Fiction from Social Justice Movements. She is a writer, social justice facilitator, pleasure activist, healer, and doula living in Detroit. Here is my conversation with one of my heroes, Adrienne Marie Brown. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Adrienne. Getting a chance to read Pleasure Activism was the best part of my weekend. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for being a reader and supporter of the book. And I'm really excited to talk with you and get to touch in with your audience.
Yes. Pleasure, of course, is a huge, huge topic here on the show where we explore all things sex and love and bodies, and they have heard me rave endlessly about Emergent Strategy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so hopefully many
Thank
of them
you
are
for raving.
Yes, are familiar. So I would love to start with something just really simple, since we're going to be talking about pleasure. I'd love to know what's bringing you pleasure today.
I just got to visit with one of my nibblings. And nibblings are, as you remember probably from the Emergent Strategy work, a nibbling is the child of your sibling without having to like pre-gender this person. And I got in late, so she'd already gone to sleep last night. So I got to wake up this morning to her voice and her wanting to play and her wanting to fix my hair, which is bright pink right now, and just like her wanting to show me her new words and her new outfits. And like that brought me a lot of pleasure this morning. It's just like, oh, I'm alive and really connected to this little being who is excited to see me. And you know, there's that thing where you're like, I love children. But you know, sometimes you see the kids and they're like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of doing my own thing right now. Mm-hmm. And so it was just great to be like, you know, it was great to wake up and just be like, oh, I'm so loved. Yes. I'm so loved.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing your pleasure with us.
I also, had the recent pleasure of yesterday, I took a drive and, I took like a mild edible and it was just like a really pleasurable drive.
Ooh. Yeah. Yay for that too.
Yeah.
So for folks who are new to pleasure activism and who maybe haven't read some of your past blog posts, let's just start with how you define pleasure activism.
Awesome. So a couple of ways, it's something that doesn't have one solid definition for me, but I think of it in a couple of ways. The first way is, I think of it as politicizing and understanding the politics of feeling good, that all these things that we do to pursue pleasure, to feel good, sex, drugs, spas, you know, there's all these things that are measures of freedom and measures of how much we get access to controlling our own lives. And so I think they're very politicized and we try to act as if they're not, like, oh, why doesn't everyone do it this way? And it's like, there's a lot of reasons why everyone doesn't have access to pleasure. So that is one level of it. And then I also think of it in relationship to justice. I think of it as like, how can we make like justice and liberation work the most pleasurable experiences we can have with each other as human beings? Right now, it feels like those areas of our being together are really like trudging uphill and going through the hardest times, being unable to understand and hear each other and reach each other. And so I think about that, like, what can we learn from intimacy? What can we learn from laughter? What can we learn from the way our minds open up with certain substances that helps us to say, oh, like, we're in our agency, we're together, and we're growing each other. That could be pleasurable. So those are kind of two ways of coming into it. And it looks a lot like harm reduction. It looks like sex worker empowerment. It looks a lot like demystifying different forms of relationship, and particularly relationships around the body and around sex and around getting your needs met, and decolonizing that territory. Because we think of sex still so much as like, how does my body belong to another person, rather than how does my body belong to me and how do I share that with another person? How do my desires belong to me and how do I share that with another person? So those are some of the areas we're moving in.
Oh, all of that just feels luscious and important.
Yay. It feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So kind of coming into this space around how much access do we have to really have that agency in our lives to access the things that give us pleasure. You talked in the book about we have to prioritize the pleasure of those most impacted by oppression.
Yes. Yeah. So it feels like that's the main thing. That's one of the main things that gets stripped away from us. You know, if I think of the legacy of my people on this land, which is I am a Black multiracial woman who's queer. So if I think about like, oh, the different populations, the different communities that I'm a part of, for most of those communities, one of the ways that we have been controlled being here has been that pleasure has not been ours. Like our bodies have not been ours. If we had children, our children have not been ours. Relationships and falling in love were not ours. They weren't a way that we were supposed to operate. And if we did that, we could be punished. Our loves could be taken away. So there's a huge, deep, and really relatively close by trauma. Like, you know, I tell folks that often, or just remind folks, if they have forgotten, then, you know, it's like the majority. It's not like, you know, that happened a long time ago and like moved past it. You know, it's like the majority of our time in this country has been that. And then this relatively short period now has existed where there have been other options where we might maybe expect to be able to stay together and to actually create a family that we self-determined, that we might maybe be able to keep our children. And there's folks now who are still in that struggle. You know, it blows my mind. It's like, yeah, just like my ancestors' experiences, there are people now who their children can be taken from them because of what someone else thinks of their race or where they came from, right?
Right.
So for me, then, it's like prioritizing the pleasure and well-being of those who are most oppressed is a way that we guarantee it for everyone. Like, in the same way, you know, I grew up, I read the Combahee River Statement, and I really identify as a Black feminist worker and a Black feminist thinker. And so there's, to me, that's one of the things that I tune into is like, well, who is getting access to this? Like, who do we prioritize for this? And if you prioritize the person who's experiencing the most harm and is the least, you know, is the furthest from power, then in a way it's like, oh, everyone would have to have it if that person had it, mm-hmm. right? Because it's like, oh, we would have had to have made sure that everyone had it so that we could get it to the person who's the furthest away. Yes. And I love that way of thinking that I'm like, okay, like, if we focus on Black women having pleasure, then everyone else in society will actually be getting access to that pleasure.
Yes. Yes. And if we can make a space where folks with disabilities and yes. trans folks and yes. fat folks
yeah.
are accessing the pleasure, then...
Because accessing the pleasure is a sign that we are turning 180 degrees in the way that we treat communities, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, as a fat woman, this is something that I walk with is, like, when I move through the airport, you know, when I'm on a plane, when I'm in a theater, when I'm in multiple spaces in the world, the way that the space itself indicates to me that I don't belong there, and much less that I shouldn't feel like the pleasure of this movie or the pleasure of this flight through, you know, air, which is like a miraculous, awesome thing. instead, I should be concerned with, like, how can I shrink myself until I don't have any impact? And how can I make sure that I don't touch anyone, that I am untouchable myself? And yeah. we do these pieces of societal shaming that lead people to believe they are untouchable, unwantable, unlovable, that they don't deserve to exist. And so a big part of my work feels like turning that around and saying, like, actually, what does it look like? Not just to say I tolerate this fat person, or I don't have to actively shame this fat person when they're around me, but to go further than that and to imagine fat pleasure and to imagine fat as desirable, to imagine that kind of pleasure for folks that we think of. And that's been, you know, that to me was an exciting territory to explore in the book, was thinking about, you know, people with disabilities, not just like to go from the place of like, oh, people have disabilities, that scares me. You know, like, I think that a lot of people are like, oh, it scares people because they're afraid of their own mortality. They're afraid of their own limitations. And we create a society in which it's not only not accepted, but it's people are given phobias about these ways that people are just born, right? Yes. It's like no one made some decision here. It's just like, I was born and my brain works this way. Or I was born and my body works this way. And just like you, just like everyone else, I'm trying to figure out how to be in my body and how to feel good given that. And we pathologize it so much. And so to me, it's like a sign that we are post-pathological, post-colonial, post-racist, post-capitalist in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. if we are actually attending to the pleasure of those most marginalized.
Mm. Uh-huh. I had this really fascinating experience over the summer, and I'm sad to say that at 40, it was the first time I'd ever experienced it, but I experienced it, so it's something, where I went to a book festival, a feminist book festival here in Vancouver, and I walked into the space with a friend,
mm-hmm.
and the friend immediately looked at the seats and looked at me and said, you're not going to be comfortable in these seats. These are not like fat friendly seats. And she walked right up to the organizer and said, my friend is in a fat body and these seats are going to make her uncomfortable. Oh, and I want great. Her to be comfortable while we're here. What can we do?
That's so great.
Amazing. And it had honestly not occurred to me that I was allowed to be comfortable in a public space.
Yes. Right.
Right.
And like, it's like the multiple, to me, that's the multiple layers, yeah. right? Where I'm like, you know, if I'm like, I'm already doing so much of the compromising for everyone. Mm-hmm. And if you're like that, you know, I think this all ties together. If you're like that walking into a public space, like, oh, I don't have the right to be here. I don't have the right to take up this space. That same thing translates into the bedroom, right? Yep. It's like, as fat mm-hmm. women and fat people, it's sort of like, oh, you're lucky to be here at all. You know, you're lucky mm-hmm. to be here. You're lucky if anything is happening to you. You're lucky if someone's treating you like a desirable person. So that's not a place from which you can make demands. That's not a place from which you can set boundaries. It's kind of like something is happening that's supposed to be good enough. And yeah. I think for me, that was a big liberation point is I'm like, my pleasure is actually the thing that is, you know, I was like, anyone who's interacting with me is lucky to get to witness my pleasure. It's mm. not the other way around. Like, I'm not lucky to get some, you know?
Yeah.
And the more I've understood that, the more pleasure has come my way. And so that's something I often will tell folks who are wrestling with weight, or who undergo major changes in their weight, sometimes due to illness, sometimes due to injury, where the body changes. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, like, I don't know how to be sexy in the ways that I learned to be sexy. And I'm like, well, examine that. You know, a lot of it is like what a man told you was sexy, or what an older woman told you was going to be sexy to a man. mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's just like these societal norms that get set that are, and, you know, it is that post-capitalist, for me, it's a post-capitalist or anti-capitalist analysis to be a pleasure activist, because it's really like, it's not pleasure as the luxury, you know, of things that you can, the very, very sheer, dear things that you can barely afford, and like trying to get those things. To me, it's actually tapping out of capitalism, because capitalism is like, there's always something wrong with you. There's always going to be something that needs to be fixed. You're never a satisfied person. You can never be happy with what you have. Like, capitalism wants you to constantly be a little miserable, so you will do shopping, right?
Yes,
And you will go out and spend your money on facials and waxing and diet pills and surgeries and, you know, ripping your face off, all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. It's just sort of like all these horrific things we do to distort what we have been given, and to reject what we've been given. And so in all of that, trying to fix it, you know, it's like, when do you stop and actually get to feel like, oh, I find that is that when I'm having a moment of insecurity, it's usually that I've been going too fast to actually give myself pleasure. And it's been going too fast to notice what's feeling good. So that's something I start to tune into. And I tune into with younger and younger people of like, do you know what it means to feel good inside your own skin?
Yes.
Like, do you know what it means to feel content with how you spend your time? Do you know what it feels like to have agency over how you spend your time, who you spend it with, what you do? And I was telling someone the other day, I really think that, and this is a big reason why I'm a proponent of meditation as an accompanying activity to anything else related to pleasure, anything else related to the body, is the moment you are able to direct your own attention, you're free. It really is a moment of freedom. And it's what gets taken from us, or what gets broken down the most, is that idea that like, you can actually put your attention where you want it to be. And so you can put your attention on the things that are wrong with you, or the things that society says are wrong with you, and you can experience great misery. Or you can turn and put your attention on how good it feels to be in a human body, mm-hmm. and how many pleasure communication tools exist inside your body. And you can put it on risking, you know, being like, oh, can I tell this person I like them? Can I invite this person on a date? Can I invite this person to fuck me the way I want to? Like, can I just keep learning skills that will increase my pleasure? And, you know, very quickly, those insecurities fall away, because you find people who want to play with pleasure and desire as much as you do. And, you know, you don't really have to look back at the folks who are still like feeling nothing, trying to impress some stranger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so much of not only the being able to direct your attention, but like pleasure is only ever in the present moment.
It is.
And so we have to be able to be present in order to really, truly feel that experience as it's happening.
Yeah. Like I often say, I used to say this all the time, like anticipation is my favorite feeling. Mm-hmm. And anticipating a future pleasure is one of my favorite feelings, but it's still like I'm feeling that feeling in the present moment.
Yes. And
letting myself daydream about it, letting myself be like, oh, that's going to be so much fun. Yeah. And I also think it really helps to make the distinction between what's pleasurable and what's numbing.
Yes.
Because I think when you can feel yourself in the present moment, even if you're like, I can feel myself with the assistance of mushrooms, or I can feel myself and, you know, I've had a few drinks, or I can feel myself, whatever. I think there's a distinction of whether you can feel yourself versus when you cannot feel yourself. Mm-hmm. And you either self-numbing or, you're turning to substances for that, or you're even turning to sex or turning to, you know, working out or other things that are moving you away from feeling. And to me, that's the main way you can tell the difference. It's like, can I actually feel myself right now or not? And then inside of this feeling myself, do I feel like I have agency over feeling good? Can I move towards feeling good?
How would you like to get 40% off pads, tampons, condoms? Yes. Well, Sex Gets Real listeners can get just that because Lola is sponsoring this week's episode. Lola is a female-founded company offering a line of organic cotton tampons, pads, and liners. They now offer sex products too. Lola makes your month a little bit easier. Their subscription is fully customizable. You can choose your mix of products, of absorbency, the number of boxes you get, and the frequency of delivery. Lola's subscription is super flexible. You can change, skip, or cancel at any time. You can choose from organic cotton tampons with either a BPA-free plastic applicator or no applicator at all, pads, liners, all-natural cleansing wipes, or you can add a box of each. Plus, with Sex by Lola, you can also add things like condoms to your period subscription so that everything is packaged and delivered beautifully. Their packaging is beautiful and discreetly right to your door. One of the reasons that Lola wanted to get into condoms is because until now, the only options have been products aggressively marketed towards men and their desires. But what about other needs? At Lola, women, and in parentheses, queer folks, come first. So you should be empowered to make decisions about your sex life. They have ultra-thin lubricated condoms made of natural rubber latex, and it comes with premium medical-grade silicone. Plus, you do good with every purchase. Every purchase with Lola, they donate feminine care products to homeless shelters across the U.S. And if you know anything about homelessness, you know that getting period products is seriously expensive and really challenging. So this is an incredible thing that they're doing with every purchase. I love the convenience of not having to run out after my period has started. It just comes right to my door at a time frame that works for me. Plus, I love the ethics of this company, which is super important for me in deciding where I'm going to spend my money. So it's woman-owned, it comes to my door exactly when I need it to, and I can totally customize it based on my needs. Listeners, you can get 40% off your subscription at mylola.com, and you can enter SGR for Sex Gets Real at checkout when you subscribe in the discount code field. So 40% off with discount code SGR at mylola.com at checkout. I've been trying to find the language, and I'm wondering if maybe this is the language that I've been hunting for around this experience of like pleasure that's self-serving and performative and almost in a way using and manipulative. You know, like, I'm going to use these other people for my pleasure. Versus this, like, deep kind of confronting, healing type pleasure that we're talking about. And I'm wondering if maybe, like, numbness or, like, moving away from feeling is part of where that comes from.
I think it's a huge part of it, because when you're using someone else to just move your pleasure, you're not feeling that person. So it's like, I'm here in this moment, and maybe this person is inside my body, but I can't really feel them, or I'm inside their body and I can't really feel them. There's no eye contact. There's no sense of togetherness. And that to me is where, like, interdependence, which is one of the core elements from emergent strategy, really gets exciting. You know, emergent strategy is all about, like, what do we learn from the natural world about collaboration, about being in right relationship with each other. And to me, pleasure is one of the great teachers of how to be in right relationship with each other, because it's the saying, you know, it's like, oh, I'm balancing out the dynamics between us and finding the power balance, finding the agreements we need, not even spoken agreements, but just like, oh, like, you know, not quite like that, touch me like that, it's not quite there. This is actually how I really want to be touched. Like, as you navigate all of that to increase your pleasure, it's all about being in relationship with this other person and not being in, like, big romantic relationship, but actually being in a dynamic of bodies, a dynamic of desires. And you're kind of coordinating your promises that you're making to each other, right? It's just sort of like, I promise to make you feel good, and I promise to stay in my body and to be honest with you about if it feels good or not, you know? And I wish that that's what we were teaching kids in school. like, when we talk about sex education, that we were teaching kids, like, here's what you're actually navigating for. You're navigating for, do I feel good? Do I feel powerful? Do I feel like I can communicate what I need? Do you feel good? Do you feel powerful? Do you feel like you can communicate what you need? Let's have an adventure, right? And let's be safe and let's be sound and all that stuff. But, like, instead of saying, let's be terrified, no one says what they want. No one uses their actual words. We kind of hope that some other person who maybe hasn't even ever done sex before is going to, like, know how to please us well. And we don't think of it as, like, we're going to learn together how to please each other. That's a place where patriarchy still shows up in such a major way. Is like, and my one of my best friends and I were just talking about this this morning, while we were like, oh, Frozen is, like, pretty cool as a movie, in part because it's really encouraging consent. That it's like, oh, I'm not asking for your kiss. I'm, like, saying, like, can we kiss? Are you interested in us kissing? Because it's something we're going to do together. Like, I'm not going to just do this thing to you, you know? And I think about that a lot, where I'm like, I was definitely raised in an environment where I was like, a man is supposed to just grab me up on a horse or, like, by my hair or, like, some other kind of uncomfortable way and, like, take me off somewhere and ravish me. And, like, he should just know how to ravish me with, like, some impossible huge penis or something. Right. It's like, when I really think back, I'm like, yeah, what was I, how was I told that sex was supposed to happen? And then, like, when I look at the actual most pleasurable experiences in my life, it's not that there hasn't been any ravishing, but there has been so much more communication and awkward, weird, bumpy moments and, like, crashing into each other's teeth and, like, learning how we actually like to kiss and, you know, doing stuff that's like, oh, that doesn't actually feel good. And I'm going to tell you in real time so that you can do something that does feel really good. Or being with someone where I was like, oh, you don't know how to have the conversation about consent. We're going to slow it way down. Because that's what I need, you know? And so I just feel like trying to be like, oh yeah. As the, you know, letting the knight in shining armor kind of just keep riding past, because that's going to be probably a mess of an experience. And, you know, instead waiting for all the other people out there who really want to connect. And I think communication is key. So, like, a big piece of pleasure activism, a big part, one of the themes you'll see as, you know, as you move through the different essays and pieces is, like, so much is about learning how do we use our communication skills in order to increase pleasure and justice and liberation when it comes to these things. And how do we stop thinking that someone's going to be able to read our minds? And or let it grow, you know, like, it's like, there are ways to grow letting, you know, that you can be transparent enough and honest enough that someone can learn what your actual preferences are. And then they can begin to anticipate those and meet those. And one of the things, you know, from emergent strategy, we talk about is like moving at the speed of trust.
Yes.
And so it's like, even in a casual sexual situation, it's like, how do I move at the speed of trust here? Like, how do I move in such a way that we start to be like, we're taking these next moves together and I feel safe. And that's a major piece for me. It's just like, I want more people to be able to feel safe and excited and thrilled inside of pleasure rather than kind of scared, kind of repressed, kind of distant.
Yes.
Yeah.
That piece around helping young people especially,
yeah,
to really figure out their own edges.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying to figure that mess out still because I spent so long performing, mm-hmm, right?
Yes.
And letting people in because I thought I was supposed to, not because I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And there's some like really beautiful kind of messiness in thinking about like how would things shift if we had more space when we were young to really get to delight in our bodies and to know,
yes,
how they felt with mostly yeses and super yeses and kind of nos and maybes.
Yes. And getting to know all that.
Right. And then being able to practice communicating that before we even moved beyond that, that exchange feels so different.
Yeah. Well, and this is why when I think about like work that I'm just like, I'm just excited about this work that's happening out in the world. There's a group called Generation 5 that into existence with the intention of like ending childhood sexual abuse in 5 generations. And I think about their work a lot because I think so much of what should happen when we're young as ways of helping us understand our bodies and understand what we're feeling and be pleasure oriented, so much of that gets distorted because there is such rampant childhood sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And so then you're in a world where, and you know, people are trying to protect for that, right? So it's like, people are like, oh, I don't want you to get hurt. There's scary people out in the world. So just quiet the whole urge altogether,
yes,
right? Like, that is wrong, that is bad, or, you know, punishing around it, hide it, all this kind of stuff happens. And there's so much that gets distorted in there that I think will be hard to undistort until the issues of childhood sexual abuse are addressed more openly.
Yes.
And so these are the kind of things that I was trying to get at in the book, was like, there's really complex dynamics. So there's a whole piece in there from my friend Amita, who is really publicly and very bravely speaking out about the childhood sexual abuse she experienced. And she's really been a leader in helping people find their voices to tell these stories. And I think it's so important what she's doing. And so she's in the book and talks about the different patterns that got set in the abuse that she experienced with her father, and trying to break through those cycles, trying to find her way back to pleasure again, finding that so much of it was in the realm of communication and finding people who would listen, mm-hmm, and who would touch her as if she had that trauma in her history. And so I wish that for so many more people that I think have that trauma in their history, is like to be able to say it and to be able to say like, here's what I need around it. Mm-hmm. Because I think even sometimes when people are able to name that, some, you know, you can start to see it.
Yeah.
I feel like now I do a lot of work around somatic stuff, and I feel like I start to really pick up on certain cues that I'm like, oh, that person probably experienced something when they were, you know, young. And I, you know, you see it in folks who are like highly sexually performative, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just like sex is all, you know, like that's the direction I went in. It was just sort of like, well, then this is who I am and this is what I do, you know? I just feel like it's something that I want more people to tune into and to clear out of the way. In the same way, I mean, like, so all of these things are like, oh, here's the rose and here's the thorn, right? It's like with drug culture, you know, I feel like so much of it gets set in really unhealthy ways. We have communities that have been decimated by certain drugs.
Yes.
We have communities where folks are serving time for drugs that are now being legalized in the country. So to me, that was a really important thing to address, is like, none of these things are easy, but that doesn't mean we give up on getting access to them, or we give up on them for the medicinal qualities that they have. So including the piece around the people's dispensary felt really important to me, that like, it's like, actually, we're figuring out ways to tap into the industry of legalizing marijuana in ways that circle back and serve the community, rather than in ways that are just like, you know, capitalism 101. They're just, right. Oh, it's legal now, so everybody just make your buck off of it and keep it moving. Yep. And that to me feels so important. I'm like, we can't just be out here irresponsible. And I think a lot of times when people think of pleasure, they think of debauchery. They think of like just no rules. Everything's just out here. And it's like, actually, the better options are when there's just clear communication, and that the freedom is happening between two people who are able to say what they want, rather than, you know, lurking around the sidelines of like, you know, what you think someone else desires of you, and trying to perform that and be that, and getting in trouble because you're a black person doing the same thing that a white person is doing. All this like fucked up stuff that's out there, that it's like, you want to break all these cycles, and there's something that ties them together, and it's pleasure.
It's really interesting because I've been doing a lot of work lately with people coming out of eating disorder recovery, and like how to start reconnecting to pleasure and body when you've had a really, really challenging relationship with body.
And what are you learning there?
Well,
how do you do it?
I know, right? It's so much.
Tell
so
everybody.
Much. Yes. Yay to Be Nourished for helping me doing all this learning. So one of the things that's really kind of occurred to me, both as I was reading the book and as you were speaking, was there's this fear when we change our relationship with food, that if we're not hyper-vigilant and hyper-controlling, that the only other alternative is like gluttony and, you know, like the biggest fears in the world of fatness and all those things. And what people have to kind of swing through is, there does have to be a little bit of a pendulum, but then you slowly kind of find your way to that middle ground of just like enoughness. What's satisfying?
What is enough?
What do I need today? And I think that's so important in this conversation around pleasure too, of like, whether we're talking about sex or we're talking about food or we're talking about drugs, like if we were to eliminate or significantly reduce the impacts of like capitalism and colonialism and white supremacy and ableism and trauma, then we would all be able to come from this place of, well, what's satisfying and enough? Because we wouldn't be responding to violence and trauma and like grasping for things that feel like we are going to run out of them, because historically they haven't been available to so many.
I feel like that's so true. I have a little section in the book that's just a word on excess, because I think that so often when people think of stuff, they're so hungry, we're so repressed, we're so not getting what we need, that then it's like over the top, like it has to go so far over the top. And I really, really, really think like, oh, how do we avoid the excesses? And I'm like someone who loves excess, you know,
me too.
Or I have loved it and I enjoy it, but I enjoy it in the right time and place.
Yes.
Where it's like, okay, now I'm going to go a little overboard here, but that's not daily life. And daily life is really about getting into that, that like, what does it mean to be satisfiable? Mm-hmm. And are you a satisfiable human being? And I think that we live on this planet that is actually very satisfying. Like, it's a very satisfying planet, but we've been disconnected from that.
Yeah.
So some of it is like reconnecting, letting those pathways open back up that are like, it can be super satisfying to just go on a walk and notice that the leaves are changing color, or go on a walk and be stomping through the snow, or just, you know, to just be outside in the world, to go be in the ocean, to go be calm somewhere. And then it can be very satisfying to climb something that's really tall, or, you know, there's just ways that we relate to the natural world that are like, this is very satisfying and good. And juxtapose that with what we're often given as like, this is supposed to be your food, this is supposed to be your pleasure, and everything is like so, you know, there's nothing real in it, and it, and you're not actually supposed to get satisfied from it. right? So like when I think about like chips or something where I'm like, oh, it's designed to keep me hungry. Like it's designed to plant the seed for me wanting another bite rather than to nourish me and excite me. And I think the same thing, like for how we approach, you know, I think sex and pornography and all of that is very much like that, where so often we're put in circumstances where it's like our satisfaction is not even on the table.
Yes.
Our hope is that you're just clicking through and clicking through and clicking through, and that we're just racking up the money while you do that.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think when you have that awareness of like, oh, y'all are trying to trick me, you're trying to just get my resources from me, and you don't really care about my happiness, then it makes it, for me at least, it always makes it easier to step back and be like, well, do I really care about my happiness? Mm-hmm. And if I care about my happiness, then how would I move right now? Like, what direction would I head in? How would I treat myself? How would I treat other people around me? And if it's radically different, then I really, you know, it's humbling. But like, oh, like most of us are not operating on behalf of ourselves.
Yeah.
And even when we come in, you know, I do all of my work is in social justice work. So social and environmental justice work. I do facilitation and I do training and I hold those spaces through conflict and meet, you know, I do mediation, things like this. And it's one of the pieces. I'm like, we're not, you know, it's not imaginable like, oh, I can be satisfied with less than justice, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, no, I don't want to be satisfied with less than justice, but I do want to be satisfied with being in the company of people who I think are really brilliant. I do want to be able to like rest into like, oh, I'm amongst some of the most incredible humans that are alive right now. I want to be able to really feel that,
yeah.
And trust in what we're doing and know that like what we're doing is making some impact. Mm-hmm. All of that comes from being able to feel myself, feel others, feel connected, and then feel the pleasure of being with.
Yes. That pleasure of being with is something else that really resonated for me. Like just taking the book as a whole, there's so many wonderful essays about sex, about like squirting and a relationship with your womanizer.
Yes.
And, you know, it's so playful and fun and wonderful. And there's also this really wonderful kind of response that you note around like creating a pleasure culture in relationship with others.
Yes.
And how often in our culture, especially I'm talking for like cis men, sex becomes the only path to touch, intimacy, vulnerability, validation, pleasure. And so kind of being able to say there's so many ways to experience pleasure in relationship with others outside of sex. Can we explore those too?
Yeah. And I feel like this is one of those things where people are always like, oh, that's like some lesbian shit or something. Like, you want to cuddle, like whatever. But I'm like, yeah, but like if we try to really learn from all the different ways that people are on the planet. You know, it just amazes me the number of men I know who once they really like gave in to cuddling, once they really like, no, I was like, oh, this actually is the shit. It's pretty awesome. Or massage, you know, I meet a ton of people where I'm like, you've never had a proper massage, like just a good massage. That's not sexual. It's not part of a service. It's just like someone attending to the part of your body that needs to be held and needs some attention.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love is when we're doing the somatics work that I do, we'll get a bunch of people in a room together, and the majority of them are not people who do body work or healing or any of that kind of stuff. They're just humans. And we'll guide each other through ways to be in contact with each other that invite healing, which might be like, you know, there's a certain way that you can put your hands under someone's head that invites them to really relax and let go. And then there's different parts of the body, different bands in the body that like given even just the right kind of small attention can actually release, let go. You can experience some real transformation in the kind of chronic pain that can come with trauma, right? Is that you're like, I'm in pain because I'm always trying to hold my legs tightly closed because I'm terrified, right? And it's like, okay, like a good healer can bring some attention to your hips. A good healer can bring some attention to your body in a way that gives you some relief. And then you find that it's like, oh, it's not just a good healer. It's just like another person. Like if you can say to another person, can you bring your hands here and your attention? Can you hold my feet? You know, can you hold my knee? that our bodies actually respond similar to other things in nature, the way that plants respond to sunlight. We respond that way to touch, to the right kinds of touch, to consensual good touch. It's just like, oh, my body is relaxing. My body is feeling more at ease. My health is increasing because of that. And I'm getting some relief. And it's like, if we get that relief often, then it becomes a part of our norm that I can turn to others for relief from pain. And relief from pain is a step on the way towards this, towards pleasure, right?
Yes. Yes.
And I think about the number of people I know who like are in chronic pain on a regular basis and don't just have that sort of regular touch. It's like, oh, I have to pay someone and I have to go in and I have to get a certain kind of touch to feel any relief, much less pleasure. And right. I'm like, oh, that's another piece. But I'm like, I just wish more people would understand that just their presence, just a caring presence combined with touch is actually healing. And it's a healing modality that almost any human being can tap into. And, you know, it does mean things like, oh, like, can you tune into touch that in a way that's not purely about sex? And like, yes. If you can't, what's that about? Get curious about it, right? There's some healing to do. There's something got wound up the wrong way. You know, that's why the majority of the body is not the clitoris. I would argue a different case. You know, if I was just like a massive clitoris walking around, I'd be like, nope, that's what touch is for. But I'm like, my whole body can feel really good in ways that are not tied to an orgasm. Yes. And that feels important. And like, this is the piece where emergent strategy comes in. It's just like, if you just pay attention to nature, if you just pay attention to the nature of your own body, it guides you in terms of how to navigate this stuff. And that's what I do. That's what I really try to drop into.
Well, I actually want to talk to you for like 3 more hours, but I also want to really respect your time. And we are at the end of our time together today. I want to just throw out really quickly that your Team Bloody Awesome and Team Bloody Fetish were hysterical and wonderful. And I will tease listeners in the intro a little bit more about that since we didn't have time.
Awesome.
But I would love it if you could share with folks how they can stay in touch with you and find you online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the main place that I do things online is I love Instagram. So Instagram is the page like where if you really want to come see my work or see what I'm up to, I'm just Adrian Marie Brown on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, but I don't use them as much or in the same ways. I run something called the Emergent Strategy Ideation Institute. So that's generally a place where you can kind of find out more about the work, the actual like trainings, or there's going to be a book tour for pleasure activism. So those are the places where people can go find out about that.
Great. Yeah. I will have all of those links in the show notes. I just want to thank you so much, Adrian, not only for sharing yourself with us, but also for the work you're doing in the world. It's like actually deeply impacted my life over the past couple of years. So thank you for just being who you are and doing what you do.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. I appreciate this podcast. I'm so glad it exists. And
me too.
I look forward to connecting more in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. To everybody who tuned in, thank you so much for listening. Go pre-order the book immediately. I will have links down below so that you can do that. Support AK Press by heading to their website, please. And until next time, I'm Dawn Sarah with Adrian Marie Brown. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the Vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love.